Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to hear the story of a Red Bull's service in World War II and get an update on veterans' homelessness. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
On June 6, 1944, 155,000 Allied troops landed along a 50-mile stretch of the heavily fortified French coastline to fight Nazi forces on the beaches of Normandy, France. General Dwight D. Eisenhower called the operation a crusade in which we will accept nothing less than full victory. More than 5,000 ships and 13,000 aircraft supported the invasion, and by day's end, the Allies had gained a foothold in France. The cost of D-Day was enormous. More than 4,000 Allied troops were killed or wounded that day. Despite heavy losses, the Allies were able to begin their march across Europe to defeat Hitler. This D-Day, I will pause and reflect on what those service members sacrificed for our country on that fateful day. I am in awe of the great service of any generation. While demands and pressures are different today than they were on D-Day, selfless service continues among the diversity of our service members.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Donald Halverson, who served with the Red Bull soldiers in World War II. And our guest host on this interview is Jason Burley. Jason served in the Marine Corps and the Army National Guard, and he's in training to take over my job, Sergeant Halverson. But welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Don, can you tell us, are you from Minneapolis? Are you from Minnesota?
I lived here all my life. Grew up near South Minneapolis, near Mineon Park and the Ford Bridge.
And so before and after World War II, you were from here and you came home?
Yep.
All right. And can you tell us what era were you born in, and when did you find out that you were going to go off to war in World War II?
Well, I grew up in 4113. What am I talking about? Grew up in South Minneapolis anyway and played around the Mineon Park and Fort Snelling, the old soldier's home by the Ford Bridge and Ford plant.
And did you get a draft notice one day?
And after I graduated from Roseville, I worked for a few months, and then I got the call from Uncle Sam wanted me, and I went down to the Armory and took the pledge and out to Fort Snelling, and then from Fort Snelling a couple of days down to Camp Blanding, Florida, and run around the swamps down there. And then from there up to Camp Roberts in Little Rock, near Little Rock, Missouri.
So that basic training, did that take a long time back then?
Well, we were there quite a few months down at Camp Blanding and just a couple of weeks up at Camp Robertson, and from there to the East Coast and got our overseas shots and got on the Liberty ship on the 13th of September of 43 and landed in Italy on the 13th of October of 43.
You remember those dates very clearly, sir.
13 was my lucky number.
I guess it was. You made it through World War II. That's a good sign.
That's right.
When you shipped out on that Liberty ship, did you know where you were going?
No.
When did you find out?
About halfway when we hit the Straits of Gibraltar, we knew we was heading for Italy. We pulled out. They said there was going to be a large convoy, and we never saw another ship. Went down in the hole and went to bed. Got up next morning. You couldn't see the end of them on the horizon.
Ships
somebody
everywhere.
Said there was 500 ships in the convoy.
Wow.
And then when we got about 20 days, and some went up to England, and some went to North Africa, and the rest of us headed for the Straits of Gibraltar. And that's where we got our first taste there. A half a dozen German planes hit some of the ships. Didn't hit ours.
And so were you up on deck when they came in?
Oh, yeah. We had all groups of us had to go to the different groups that were manning the guns in case they needed help.
And how many guys were with you? How many guys were on a ship that size, Liberty ship?
I don't remember now. A couple hundred of us. A
couple hundred?
They weren't too big, you know.
Sleeping in hammocks?
Yeah.
So kind of
row after row, three high, just grab one.
Imagine there were a few guys that were a little sick on the crossing.
Oh, crap. Some of those guys hung on the railing. I don't know how they lived even.
Just had a tough ship ride.
They were like a bobber in the water.
So, sir, when you got over there, where was your first landing? What was your first landfall?
Well, I landed first at Bari, Italy. We had supplies for the British. And then landing craft come in after we helped unload, and then we went around the toe in the heel of Italy and landed in Naples. And after, about an hour hike, I guess, that's when I joined up with the 34th.
So that was
at Naples.
That was the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division.
168 Regiment.
All right. And what year was that then when that all happened?
1943. I landed there on the 13th of September of 43, and that's when I joined the 34th.
13th, okay. Did you know you were joining a legendary Minnesota division?
Didn't know nothing about them.
But you know a lot about them now, don't
you? Yeah.
So it's my understanding that the 34th Infantry Division fought its way up through Africa and then all the way up through Italy.
They were the first American division to go to Europe, trained with the British and French that were evacuated from France, and then in the spring or January of 42, and then in fall of 42, they landed in Italy or in North Africa. And then after they cleaned them out of there, then they landed. In fact, they landed in Italy about the same time that I left the States.
So you actually ended up being like a replacement for some of those folks they lost.
Yep, they lost a lot of them in Africa.
And how long did it take you to fight your way through Italy?
Well, I started, like I say, the 13th of September, and May 2nd of 45 was the best day of my life when we looked at the Swiss Alps and they said the war was over.
The war was over. In between, there were a lot of tough fights going on.
Oh, yeah. We had Mount Pantano. Well, we had three crossings of Volturno River and Mount Pantano. And from there, went to a casino a few days there, and we lost most of our, half our company almost. And from there to Anzio. From there up to, and broke out of Anzio, up to Rome, up toward Pisa, where we first hit Leghorn, Italy, and then from there to Pisa. And then up to Florence, to North Apennines, the winter of 44 and 45, and broke out there in the spring and up to the Swiss border then.
So, Jason, sounds like Don walked his way across Italy, and that's not a flat country, is it?
No, it's quite remarkable. First, let me just say, as a Red Bull, it's quite an honor to spend a few minutes in the company of a true American hero and a member of the greatest division and the greatest generation. So thank you, sir, for your service. Curious, you know, that topography, difficult things that, you know, most of us in the recent era haven't had to experience being in the flat desert. What was the most difficult part of that movement?
Well, I think November was the worst part of the, in November it was a rainy month and we'd stay up in the mountain for the whole month. Your clothes were soaked, your bedding is soaked, and a couple inches of mud hole in your foxhole and eat cold. And that's when we got our best, two best baths, November of 43 and November of 44, we got a shower.
Two baths in a year.
Wanted to keep us clean.
I understand you had a secret for keeping your socks dry.
Yeah, you always had one on and two in your helmet, and you wring out the old dirty ones and put them up there and dry and put a dry one that saved your feet.
What happened to the guys that didn't do that?
And they ended up black toes and amputations.
So they had some problems if they didn't take care of themselves.
Well, they leave them on, and when we get back down to a few days' rest, they take off their shoes for the first time. They swell up. And
couldn't get the boot back on.
You know,
well, that was pretty sad that that happened. Now, Jason, as he said, his last station was with the Army National Guard, and he was a public affairs officer for the 34th Infantry Division. So he's a fellow member of the 34th, only a current member. And but he was asking you about the terrain. A lot of mountainous terrain. You walked your way all the way across Italy?
That's all we ever said. One more hill, and there were big ones.
And there was always another one
coming.
That
first one just outside of Naples, that Mount Pantano, you know, the Germans hung on to it. One company was up there for a week, and we were the second one to relieve them. And then there was a third and a fourth before the Germans left. But you're just up there, narrow, rocky plateau, and just flipping hand grenades to one another. And we run out of them because they, when they found out that we had replaced the other ones, they started dropping mortars on the backside of the hill. They couldn't hit us with them, but couldn't get any rations up, so we run out of water and get low on hand grenades, so we put rocks in our sea ration cans and threw them over just to keep them alert.
Just to scare them and let them know you were still there.
And nighttime there, just to keep them awake.
Now, were the Germans pretty tough fighters?
Darn right they were. Had a lot of good weapons, boy.
But not as tough as the Red Bulls.
Oh, I don't know. On Anzio, we had, if you heard of those, the Anzio Express. We called it the Anzio Express because it sounded like a freight train coming. the barrels are smooth, you know, and rifling on the shell, and they made a lot of noise when they come, and then they're screaming memes. They were another one that was bad.
But you stayed through it all, and you fought your way through it.
I was lucky. I was one of the lucky ones.
Lost some good friends along the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where you didn't want to be too good long friends, because I had some guys in my platoon that got too close to one another. When one of them got killed, the other guy, sometimes I'd have to send them back or a little break with the kitchen crew because they missed their partner. They got too close to people.
Now, Don, we've learned over the years the history of the Red Bulls and fighting through Africa and up through Italy. And what we're told is that when the Red Bulls were fighting through Italy, they occupied 18 German divisions that weren't otherwise available to go to Normandy. And the guys that landed at Normandy, at least the history I read, says that it was a darn good thing you were over there fighting those Germans so hard.
I never heard that one, but sounds good anyway.
Well, yeah, it sounds good to me. And we made it through Normandy. That was a pretty tough slog, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, they claimed that there was more bodies at Cassino than there was on the landing in France. In fact, when we was on Anzio, they had a truce where both sides went out and picked up the bodies because tanks were running over them. They couldn't go around them anymore. Stunk so bad and rotten.
So the truce held long enough just to clear the battlefield.
Up and smoked, changed cigarettes and booze and stuff, and then went back to war after a couple of days when they cleaned up the bodies. A
couple of days rest and then right back at it. So that was a tough period in your life fighting
through.
Well,
I wasn't there. Then I was up on Anzio when they did that.
Okay. All right. Well, Don, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we want to hear a little bit more about your service with the... We're not done yet. We're going to be right back. We just have to take a short break.
All right.
We're speaking with Don Halverson, who was a member of the Red Bulls during World War II on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. I've been joined today by my special co-host, Jason Burley. And our guest today is a tech sergeant from the Red Bulls in World War II, Don Halverson. Don, we're happy to have you here in the studio today and thrilled that you're still with us to tell these stories. We were talking off the air about dates and the dates of these battles and things, but when you were walking across Italy and climbing mountains and down from mountains, you really didn't know what day it was. You didn't probably even know what month it was.
All the same, whether it was a weekend or Sundays or nothing, made no difference there.
Just trying to stay alive, get some food and water, and get through it.
Well, you can't duck that stuff, you know. All the booby traps and minefields and artillery mortars.
When you think back on it, are you amazed that you made it?
I am. I didn't think I'd make 21.
Well, you made it, and you've had a nice long life since, sir. And we were talking towards the time of the Normandy landing that you were heavily engaged with the 18 German divisions. And at some point in that war, there was a special day came. You want to talk about that, Jason?
Well, it was very interesting. I mean, how coincidental. You know, you had the opportunity to fight your way through Italy and see the surrender of a German division. Tell us a little bit about how that was and who surrendered to who and the names of those divisions.
Well, we got up in the Po Valley when we broke out of there, and we was heading for a town of Fazenza, about 100 miles north. And before we got there, a convoy of trucks picked up and told us to load up. They'd spotted a German division. So we went back toward Bologna and crossed the Po River on a makeshift bridge there, and then went 175 miles north of there, unloaded, and went up over a hill, and it was a big open area and with trees on each side, and we were just walking slow, all spread out, our company, and pretty soon a motorcycle come by with a German on it, and about 75 yards in front of us. We all stopped and just stood still, and pretty soon a couple of command cars that the German officers rode in, and some trucks with the infantry in them. They got in about the middle of the clearing, and all of a sudden they stopped and looked at us for a while, and the white flag went up. And three of their officers talked to some of our officers out in front, and the German officers went back and started hollering out, and all the guys jumped out of their truck and threw the rifles in the pile and surrendered to us.
So it was the American 34th Infantry Red Bull Division accepting the surrender from?
The 34th German Division.
That was a kind of a historic moment. Yeah, did you know at the time it was your 34th division and their 34th?
Until I got that card there from General Bolte, that a souvenir for the just for the deal that 34th German surrendered in Minnesota, 34th.
Jason, as a member of the division, that must have been one of the high points that you remember when you think about World War II and fighting through Italy.
Yeah, just a remarkable. I mean, the organization in and of itself, more frontline combat than any other division in World War II, more decorated than any other division in World War II. And clearly, this is the reason why. And then what a great story at the end to have the 34th German Division surrender to the 34th Red Bulls. Just a great story.
That's why General Bolte made it there as a souvenir.
And as Walter Cronkite would say, you were there.
Yeah, I was.
You were there. Can you tell us, when did you find out the war was over? Where were you?
Up there looking at the Swiss border, and the captain got a call, and he hollered it out. That was May 2nd of 45, and said the war in Italy was over. And then 6 days later, it ended in Germany.
Did you believe him?
You betcha. We looked up at the Alps, and we looked down, nice lake down there. We all stripped off our clothes and jumped in the lake. We hadn't had a bath in months.
Well, I bet that felt
good. We threw our long johns in there after you had them on about 4 months, and I think we killed every fish in there if there was any.
Sounds like material for a bonfire to me. Burn those long johns.
Donna.
Good feeling. And then after we was there a while, then we got they took a let a few of us time and go up into Switzerland, Zurich, and walk around. That was nice. And sleep in those big beds, you know, duck feathers, you know, disappear.
You, you didn't even know what those were anymore,
you
know, did you?
Man, after sleeping on the ground for 2 years.
Don, I'm curious. You came back to Minnesota following the war, 34th Infantry Division here. Do you spend much time with anyone in the 34th Infantry Division or the association now, or have you spent much time with the Red Bulls?
Well, I had, after I retired in 88, I'd go up once a month and visit the National Guard up in Brooklyn Park there.
Very good. What a great facility, great armory there.
Bring them some donuts and stuff from the bakery, you know, for coffee time in the morning.
Very good. And what did you do after you got out of service? And what did you do here back in Minneapolis?
Well, there wasn't much doing right the first time, and then finally, well, everything was shut down, making over, you know, all your plants and everything was shut down for military stuff, and they all converted over for civilian things. And I worked at downtown Chev from 46 to 81, 35 years, and they went bankrupt, so then I worked at Mid-Continent Engineering for about 8 years till I retired.
And you've got your son with you here in the studio today, your son Tom, so somewhere in there you got married and he came along.
Things happened, yes.
Things happened after you get married.
Met a gal on a blind date in 46, got married in 47, and lasted 63 years.
Very good, sir.
Had a good time. Lots of polka dancing.
With polka dancing, we've done that myself. Now, Don, a couple last questions here. You told me you just got back from a trip.
Yes, I did. Very nice trip. The Vikings sponsored.
Where did you go?
We had 4 days in England and 4 days in France, and saw a lot of the beachheads and cemeteries. And
how many people went?
Just six of us, World War II vets, from 93 to 101.
And the six of you were on the Vikings broadcast recently, too.
I guess so.
Well, we got a picture of you standing here at attention with the young.
Well, that was at the football field.
At the football field.
Yeah, they gave us all, each one got six tickets for the football there, so had relatives there, and then we went out on the field there at halftime and had a little nice time out there.
So you had a pretty good 8-day trip and then got to go to the ball game.
Had a better day trip at the ballpark.
Don, we've just got a couple of minutes left. For all the young people today that are thinking about joining the service and serving their country, do you have any message for them? What would you tell the young people that are just now taking the oath of office and, excuse me, and signing up?
I don't know. I guess they claim a lot of them. It's good to go there. They can make money for college and stuff like that and learn something maybe.
And make a lot of good friends.
Yeah, I think so. I met a lot of good friends up at the National Guard up there. It's nice talking to people.
And some of those lasted a lifetime, didn't they?
Yeah.
All right, sir. Any final thoughts?
All up
about
in the head.
Yes, sir. It's a good
just
thing.
Just like World War II. It's all up in Technicolor.
Well, we've got to tell these stories so the young people know what you went through. Any final thoughts for our listeners, Don?
No, just glad to be home and glad to be living at this age.
Well, sir, we're thrilled that you took some time to come visit us at Minnesota Military Radio. We wish you all the best.
Well, thank you.
And hopefully we'll see you at another Vikings game sometime soon.
I hope so. That'd be nice.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
That was Don Halverson, Tech Sergeant from the Red Bulls in World War II on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to get an update on veterans homelessness. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Happy birthday to the GI Bill. On June 22, 1944, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Servicemen's Readjustment Act, known informally as the GI Bill. This landmark legislation transformed the lives of millions of veterans who helped shape the future of our nation. The men and women who came home from World War II, commonly referred to as GIs, went on to colleges and universities, built businesses, and became known as the greatest generation. Upon signing the bill, President Roosevelt said, quote, "With the signing of this bill, a royal rounded program of special veterans benefits is nearly complete. It gives emphatic notice to the men and women of our armed forces that the American people do not intend to let them down," end quote. Today, there are several GI bills to choose from. Knowing which one you qualify for and how to apply can help you make sure you get the benefits that you need to reach your educational goals. Visit MinnesotaVeterans.org for more information.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now in the studio is our guest host, Jason Burley. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
Jason, I'm excited to hear you're going to tell us all about veterans homelessness in Minnesota, so please have at it.
Well, we're very excited to have my friend John Lovold back, Chief Operating Officer of the Minnesota Assistance Council of Veterans. John, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you, Tom, for having me here today.
John, just getting started, you know, it's interesting to speak to somebody on the radio that you know so well, but could you do a little background on your experience, what you've done? I mean, a long military career, and then your move to the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that. I would say that it's a lot less stressful to be in a studio with a friendly face across the aisle here from me, somebody that I've served with, and our service together in the Minnesota National Guard. We both retired at about the same time here at the mid-2015 timeframe. I spent 25 years myself with it, which included time as a enlisted soldier right out of high school. I enlisted, came back home, went to college, was having a very enjoyable time serving the country. So I went back on active duty and ended up in the Minnesota National Guard, where I spent the remainder of my career with some opportunities, deployments, things like that. But overall, great experiences serving with people like yourself.
We had a great experience. We have a lot of mentors, and you continue to service. Many of us went off into other ventures, but you continued your service with the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. Can you tell us how that happened, how you did that, why you did that, and now what's going on at MACV?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's sometimes a rough transition and leaving service and serving for 25 years. You get into this rhythm of the people you're around and the things that are happening. And I transitioned out of the military, landed into a job that I very much didn't enjoy. Short period of time there, landed into another job that I found to be sufficient. And I shouldn't say sufficient. It was actually, I had an opportunity to work closer to veterans again. And then the third, time was the charm when I got a call from retired Major General Neil Lloydalt, who we both have had the opportunity to serve under, a great leader for the military, and now he's a great leader for the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. But he called me up and he said, "John, I think I got something if you might be interested." And that's all I had to hear. He said, "We're gonna help homeless veterans," and he didn't have to explain anything else about what we were going to do. We just knew we were going to get after that mission. So the Minnesota Assistance Council has been around for 30 years, and we've transformed quite a bit here in the last few years. But the mission has always really focused on housing stability for veterans. That part has not changed at all. But as an organization, we've grown. We provide more services statewide than ever before to more veterans with our case managers. We're growing and transforming in a way that as we ran into the pandemic, we were actually ready for something like that to happen because we had moved into more technology and we were ready to work remotely. So that part was very, you know, right place, right time for that, for Neil to be in charge of that organization.
Yeah, great leader, great mentor, and a way for many of us to advance our careers and ourselves personally. We're visiting with John Lowald, the Chief Operating Officer of the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. And John, you made a nice segue there for us in terms of the pandemic. How did COVID-19 affect MACV, and what did you learn that you're now carrying forward into the future as you continue to serve the veteran homeless community?
I think for a lot of organizations, what you first have to realize is, can we survive this? What's going to change? And as I mentioned before, our shift in our organization, we had decentralized, we'd pushed down leadership at the levels and you know where it needed to be. It wasn't all focused in one location. So when we went into a remote service composure, that was, we were ready for that. It was okay. We just stopped coming into the office and fired up the computers, and we learned that we didn't have to go face to face in order to assist a veteran. We really just needed to make contact.
It's an interesting, perspective, right? Where I don't need to make face to face contact, because I think sometimes you think, oh, homelessness, how are we ever going to contact them if I don't meet them in the street? How does that work?
Technology, for starters, but the other way that it works is something just like what we're doing right now, talking about it and informing more people about MACV and their mission, so that when they run into somebody who might be into their homelessness, they're actually homeless or they're at risk of becoming homeless, they'll say, "I remember this segment," and they'll call, pick up the phone, and call MACV.
One of the great parts of this show is its reach, its broad reach across Minnesota. What is the current state of homelessness, both in outstate and in the metro? What impact have we been having, and how can we help?
That's a great question. Last year, before we went into the pandemic, we had the homeless registry number down to 270. And the homeless registry, for those who aren't aware, the state of Minnesota does a really great job working with any agency that works in homelessness to identify, capture the name of an individual, and get all their contact information, and then get them on the registry so that all the other organizations can stand around, sit around a table, a computer, whatever we got to do to meet virtually, and then talk about that veteran, how we're going to assist them. And it takes many organizations besides just MACV, but that registry is a list of what I say, it's 270 veterans that were actually brave enough, willing enough to raise their hand and say, "I actually need help," because that's the number of the people who are ready to do that.
And that's an important part, right? You have to actually be ready to accept help to actually move through the program.
And we both know, being veterans, that's sometimes a hard thing to admit you need assistance.
Yeah, a lot of pride comes with service, and so with that comes a little bit of difficulty of reaching those people that need help. Any new programs MACV has brought to the table over the last 18 months that we should know about?
Well, one thing that we're right place at the right time, but it for the wrong reasons. We're in a pandemic, and all of the shelters were in a position that they had to socially distance. And that, if you've ever been into a shelter, they're not designed for social distancing. So that meant people were going to be back out on the street. And at the same time, we had hotels throughout the metro that were empty because nobody was traveling. And, very quickly but deliberately and well planned out for our organization, we set up a memorandums of agreement, and we're able to essentially start housing some veterans in hotels.
A lot of great programs, a lot of things for us to continue to learn about. I'm looking forward to the next segment, where we'll talk a little bit about some new MACV initiatives, specifically around landlord engagement and an acronym, ADUs, which I'm anxious to learn more about. We have to take a short break, but we'll be back with John Lowald, the Chief Operating Officer of Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. This is the Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your guest host, Jason Burley, and we're talking today with John Lowald, Chief Operating Officer of the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. John, as we continue on, I think as we were going to break, I had mentioned a few new initiatives that MACV has created, specifically around landlord engagement and an acronym ADU. Can you share with us what the ADU is and what these programs are?
Absolutely. We could start with the ADU. The ADU is, it's not a military acronym, if you would believe, but it's a accessory dwelling unit. And it is, it's been around for many years, but most people have always just liked their space to be their space. And an accessory dwelling unit is creating another separate living space on your property. So if you have a lot that is large enough to support an ADU, you could have that in there. City codes are different from place to place, but they will hook up to the house or they can hook up straight to the city. The real component of an ADU is a willing homeowner that wants to have an ADU, whether it's for their own purposes. Some people are in the pandemic; they've made them offices out of them.
So I think about these across Minnesota, either here in Southwest Minneapolis, where I'm from, or outstate. You know, you've got that garage. Mm-hmm. It's got an opportunity to have the room above the. Is that an ADU?
That can be an ADU, absolutely. A room above a garage, especially if somebody is has intent to continue to be able to park. Or in the case for MACV, we have a number of homes in South Minneapolis, as well as North Minneapolis and throughout the city. And those homes have, aging and decaying garages that were not necessarily being used. And rather than going and looking for more property, we're trying to look at the property we have and how can we better utilize it. So we're partnering with an organization called Yard Homes, where they are building ADUs right here in Minnesota. I think one of the critical things to remember when people start talking about tiny homes or ADUs or anything like that, when they send you the link to this great story in San Diego, you have to remember that's San Diego. It's not Minnesota. So they're building them here in Minnesota for Minnesota.
A little different. Building requirements, which gets me to a question. What is the requirement for an ADU to, properly and respectfully house a veteran, not just some random room above the garage, right?
Right. Where, they have to have their own facilities. So a bathroom, kitchen, it doesn't have to be, it can be straight studio. It can have separate bedrooms. If you start looking into different funding sources or resources for individuals when they're receiving HUD money for their housing subsidy, there's different requirements based on the size of the family. So an ADU really is best designed for a single individual, a couple or a person, it's a couple of people. But they have to be able to have access to their own water, plumbing.
So fully self-sustained unit, I've got to be able to enter and exit myself, lock my door, nobody can come in, I can cook myself a meal, I can take a shower. That kind of
absolutely
puts the requirements together.
The person in the house who likes the house at 75 degrees when it's 90 out, you don't have to be on that same thermostat.
Right. So the prelude to this was a bit about landlord engagement. How are you engaging landlords differently, or is there an incentive, or are people just stepping up to help?
Well, the landlord engagement component that is the biggest is really the word of mouth, to let the landlords know what is available, to let them know what the demand is, the need. We talked about 270 names on the homeless registry right now, of which the vast majority, 200 of them, are in the metro. So we have a need for housing many single veterans inside the metro space. And we are working very closely with Commissioner Herkey and his team, Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. They have a landlord incentive fund that can kick in as soon as they move a veteran into one of their units. And then they have a vacancy fund if they set a unit aside, but it takes a little bit longer to get through the inspection process so they're not left holding an empty unit. And then there's also a contingency fund as well. If something were to go wrong where the standard damage deposit isn't going to cover it, that can kick in as well.
So you've reduced a lot of the risk related to the to the landlord.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking, is reducing that risk so that they know when they take a veteran from MACV, that's not just a handoff. They're actually getting that team of MACV, the MDVA, the VA. It all comes with that veteran when they move a veteran into one of their units.
One of your longer standing programs, the hotel program, has been in effect for a while. How is that program being affected by some of these new initiatives? And, you know, how utilized is the hotel program?
Well, longer standing is a year. I mean, really, when the pandemic hit and we were forced, I shouldn't say we, but the shelters were forced to lessen the people that were in the those buildings, and the hotels were available. We stood that up, but the real impact and success has been based on, I go back to face-to-face. It was really, we have staff on site. We are engaging the veterans on a daily basis. If you're in a shelter and you have to leave at a certain time and maybe you come back and you get a bed, but it's not even the same bed, there's no rhythm in your life. And that hotel program has really provided us the opportunity to build trust and get lives, you know, back into a rhythm.
A lot going on. I know you have a lot of initiatives. These are great initiatives that have come forward. This ADU program really excites me. I think that's fantastic, especially the engagement of our landlords to know that they're not out there on their own. But there's a lot of other stuff going on, too. Transitional homes. I want to give you 30 seconds to talk to us quickly about your transitional homes and what's going on there.
We are continuing to partner with Lennar and the Housing First Foundation of Minnesota and building more transitional housing units as they are needed. And we'd look to do more work in North Minneapolis, where we think they could benefit from a lot more housing opportunities.
Not enough time. Too much good work going on with the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. I want to thank you for joining us. John, please feel free to join us anytime.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Jason. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonhardt. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
Tim, I wanted to talk a little bit in general about the Minnesota Patriot Guard, and I'm looking at your mission statement. It says the Patriot Guard Riders is a 100% volunteer, federally registered 501c3 nonprofit organization, which ensures dignity and respect at memorial services honoring fallen military heroes, first responders, and honorably discharged veterans. Tim, we haven't talked about it for a while, but the Patriot Guard goes back to a long time ago. There were some people protesting at the funerals for our military that were killed in action, and a group of guys on motorcycles got in between the protesters and the family, and kind of goes back to that as a start, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, and it's always been peaceful. It's, all we do is, of course, most of the guys in our group are a little bit wider than normal, and we're really good at blocking the scenery that the protesters were putting on. So you put one of our guys and a flag in between a protesting group and the family burying their loved one, there's not much they can see.
And it's really all about honor, dignity, and respect for those military folks that we lost. Like we were talking about on Memorial Day, they signed up, they volunteered to go serve our country in the military, and some of them didn't get to come home.
No.
And those that gave their lives that way should be honored, and that's what your Minnesota Patriot Guard and your riders is all about.
Yes, yeah. We just want to make sure that they have an honorable, peaceful going away. It's the least we can do as an American people.
And Tim, I know that you go on these missions with your riders to these funerals, and you go to some of these events where our military are going on deployments, but your favorite mission is the homecomings.
Oh, the homecomings are the greatest. I mean, it's awesome to see the family waiting for their loved ones to get off the bus, and some of them just see their family for the first time in months and months and months, and their little kids have grown up, and we wear our sunglasses even when it's not sunny, because you get that little tear coming out of your eye. We don't want the family to see us in our weak moments.
And Tim, who's eligible to become a Minnesota Patriot Guard rider?
Anyone that wants to honor our military for what they've done for us and what they do for us.
And even if they don't ride a motorcycle?
Oh, absolutely. We just want people there to show those families that complete strangers, American people, are standing there, and we care about what happened.
And where do they go to sign up?
I would just go to our webpage at mnpatriotguard.org. And on the left side, it says join us. Just fill out all the information, and we'll start sending you when we're having missions. And you can pick and choose the ones you want to.
When you show up, and there'll be a ride captain. They'll tell you where to stand and what to do, and you get to experience something that's very special.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, it's June, and I know you've got your motorcycle out. I want you to promise me you're going to be careful.
Oh, yeah, I promise.
All right, Tim, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Tim Leonhardt from the Flag Line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. World War II Red Bull, Don Halverson, John Lovell from MACV, Tim Leonhardt from the Minnesota Patriot Guard, our guest host, Jason Burley, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about mental health of today's service members and hear about how the PGA is helping the VA with vets therapy. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio.